ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, the federal government's announced a major overhaul of the Defence Department. It's the biggest restructure to the Australian Defence Force, we're told, since the Vietnam War era, half a century ago. An independent agency will be created to ensure taxpayer funds are being spent in the best way possible. No, this is not some sort of hollow joke in deferration of defence spending. After the Defence Department's recent struggles to tackle cost blowouts and delays in the delivery of projects. It'll see, we are told, the merger of three agencies into a new independent delivery organisation, rather prosaically named the Defence Delivery Agency. It'll be painted white. It'll manage billions of dollars of complex defence and military projects. Now, the Defence Minister, Richard Marles, who's had his differences with the ADF and the Department over recent years, had this to say about the move.
This is one of the most significant reforms to defence that we have seen. It will greatly change the way that defence operates, and it will make sure that as we spend more money in the defence budget, we are doing so in a way which sees programs delivered on time and on budget.
Well, the announcement coincided with news that Australian authorities are tracking a Chinese flotilla in the Philippine Sea, with concerns that it might be en route to Australian waters. As Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and his now wife Jodie Hayden were spotted heading off for a five-day honeymoon after the intimate marriage ceremony on Saturday at the Lodge. Joining us for this and other news too is Claire Armstrong, the ABC's chief digital political correspondent based at Parliament House in Canberra. Claire's also been monitoring the final Senate estimates for 2025. Claire, good evening to you. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Now, big news, well, we're being told by the government it's big news with this defence revamp. I wonder whether it's all being massively over-egged, and it's, after all, it's a bureaucratic arrangement, isn't it? What's involved here?
Well, I mean, as you said, the helpfully named Defence Delivery Agency will hopefully deliver
deliver some defence, yes.
It's all in aid of, you know, at the moment I think the defence budget's about $60 billion a year, but within a decade that's expected to rise about $100 billion, which kind of goes to show there is a lot of cash in this department, and there are dozens of projects that are collectively decades behind schedule and way over budget. The idea being centralise this delivery, have some independent oversight, and hopefully not have quite the delay and wastage that we've seen pretty historically throughout defence.
Pardon my scepticism, but rearranging bureaucrats to different desks and calling them something else, I'll believe it when I see it. Look, let's hear some more about the move. This is Defence Minister Richard Marles and Defence Industry Minister Pat Conroy today.
I think this is actually ensuring that we have an agency which gets capability into the hand of the warfighter much more quickly. And what it's about is making sure that project delivery is moved much closer to government. Because what the National Armaments Director will do is report directly to government through ministers. So that's really the direction that we're heading.
And Richard's absolutely right. At the moment, we have around 1,500 ADF personnel working these three groups, and we envisage a similar number working across the new agency. Obviously, the details will be worked out, but there'll be absolutely be a significant share of the workforce will be highly skilled acquisition professionals in uniform. But the best thing we can do for warfighters is get them the capability they need as soon as we can. And this is what this is about, improving schedule performance for the warfighters, having the ADF and the Department of Defence decide the equipment they need with government approval, and then this agency getting it as fast as possible, combining ADF expertise, APS expertise, and good brains from the commercial sector.
Well, they're talking about quickly, but this whole bureaucratic arrangement's not going to be quick. It'll be a full 2 years from when Richard Marles has vowed root and branch reform of the department to the establishment of this new independent agency. Will not be actually independent till a year from next year, so not everyone is impressed, including the Shadow Defence Minister, Angus Taylor. He says the government still needs to do a lot more to boost military spending and equipment.
There is nothing in this announcement other than moving bureaucrats around. Now, that may or may not be a good idea. We'll look closely at it. But we need far more than that if we're going to deal with what are the most dangerous circumstances we've faced since the Second World War.
Claire, this is the thing, isn't it? Australia does face complex acquisitions, and if you think the best predictor of future performance is past performance, you wouldn't be optimistic, would you?
No, I think if we're to translate some of what Richard Miles and Pat Conroy were saying there, some of this seems to be a bit about when things aren't going to plan, which seems to be an inevitability, they'll be a bit clearer whose heads to bang over that. And having this idea of an agency that's got people reporting into government, and rather than the government handing over billions and then hoping that it gets delivered, having a bit more checking in of where things are at, maybe that will speed things up.
As I say, proof of the pudding is in the eating, as they say. Well, we shall eat very carefully, looking for joy here. I imagine you'd have to think if the AUKUS project proceeds on foot, then that's about the most complex thing Australia has ever undertaken. You'd have to be sceptical that it's going to be delivered on time or on budget or anywhere near that, of course, wouldn't you think?
Yes, I would think so.
Hey, speaking of concerns about China's build-up and all of that, what do we know about this latest report of a Chinese naval group? I mean, we think it's three vessels or something, isn't it, sailing around the Pacific off the Philippines. What's the concern here, or is there actually any concern?
Well, I mean, I think there is it's a bit of a watching brief situation. Richard Miles today confirmed that the ADF is monitoring a Chinese flotilla that's just near the Philippines. But as we've sort of learned in the past, that we don't tend to get advanced notice of when these ships are travelling, as they are well within their rights to do in international waters. And if they were to come any closer, we would probably be quite interested. Obviously, the last time that Chinese vessels circumnavigated Australia, they ended up conducting live fire exercises in the Tasman Sea. And so the question is really, you know, are we monitoring? Do we have the capability to sort of be alert to the potential for that to happen again? At this point, it seems like Richard Miles is saying it's a fairly routine situation, but who knows?
Yeah. All right. Look, Claire, the final Senate estimates for the year on this week, rather messy issues emerged. A tranche of 100,000 odd parliamentary communications was handed to a law firm, HWL Ebsworth, in the same year that it was the victim of a Russian-linked hack. Do we know what's been revealed or compromised?
Well, so it's not that we're not sure that anything's being hacked as such, but these were emails containing communication between politicians, parliament staff, security officers, and the real issue is that they were handed over by the Department of Parliamentary Services, which is the department that runs the building physically of Parliament. This law firm actually didn't have security clearance to receive those communications, and then it just so happens in that same year there was a Russia-linked hack that targeted this law firm. So really what we've had in estimates is this kind of slow admission from the department of, oh, yes, we've given over these emails when the recipient didn't have clearance. Yes, it's the same recipient who was subject of the hack. But the department is saying not all of the communications that they handed over were held on the servers of this law firm. So no privileged material or anything like that was at risk. But it's a very messy, as you say, situation.
Anything else out of estimates?
There's been a bit of back and forth with some crosstalk this afternoon that got quite lively about power bills between Penny Wong and James Patterson over the government still being mum on whether it will extend the power bill rebates due to end in December. But it's early days yet. We've got a couple more days. I think there'll be some fireworks tomorrow. We're expecting the National Anti-Corruption Commission to front up, and there's been quite a lot of focus on the potential conflict of interest of the NAT commissioner engaging in some consulting for defence. So I think there'll be, you know, for the political nerds at home, there'll be some fireworks later in the week.
Yeah, speaking of power bills, there was a warning, is that the way to describe it, from AEMO, the electricity regulator, about the danger of Eraring power station closing and leaving a shortfall in capacity in the eastern part of Australia. Now, Eraring is a massive coal-fired power station which has already been extended. It's due, I mean, it's an end of life has come and gone. They've extended by a couple of years, the New South Wales government. But AEMO are saying, look, if it does close, at the moment, there may not be renewable capacity to cover the gap. What's the story here?
Yeah, so as you said, Eraring was due to close 2025. It's already been extended to 2027. And now the regulator is saying that it's not so much that there's not enough renewables, but it's this idea of a stabilising infrastructure needed for the things like, you know, we know rooftop solar, for example, huge amounts of power being pumped into the grid during the day when the sun is shining. AEMO warning that if we keep going down this path of building all these great renewables, if the sort of supporting infrastructure to stabilise all of that doesn't keep up, that when Eraring comes off, that will create a risk of these blackouts. It's interesting, actually, the New South Wales Premier, Chris Minns, today sort of not leaning in but very much leaving the door open to if there's a discussion that has to be had about extending the life of Eraring further, then that's a discussion they will have, obviously, at huge cost. I think it cost about $225 million a year to keep these coal-fired power station beyond its life, and obviously doesn't help with the emissions reductions goals that New South Wales and Australia has, but it might be necessary in the end.
Yeah. Look, another concerning story today, internet-connected cars are apparently, we're told, being weaponised for abuse by perpetrators of family and domestic violence. Now, there's been a surge in reports from frontline service providers, and Australia's eSafety Commission has warned, has issued new advice outlining there are patterns of abuse and warning signs. This is following a surge in reports of perpetrators using smart cars to not only track their victim's location, but also to geofence the cars so that they can be turned off or not permitted to go beyond certain areas or even locked remotely. This is the Federal Social Services Minister, Tanya Plibersek.
We've heard about a home refrigerator being locked remotely, preventing a victim of violence and her children from eating when the perpetrator's not in the house. I've even heard of cat feeders having remote cameras activated to see whether a victim of domestic violence is home alone or in the house.
Yeah, Australia's eSafety Commissioner Julian McGrath has described another example.
In this particular case a few years ago, a kill switch would go off every time the woman went more than a kilometre beyond her home. So she basically had this very small environment where she could drop her kids off at school, go to the grocery store, but couldn't do much beyond it.
Claire, what's going on here and what's being done in response to this remote kind of control?
Yeah, so the eSafety Commission has a reporting line for what's known as technology-facilitated abuse, and that's, you know, we heard Tanya Plibersek there talking about smart devices in the home being used to either spy on or control someone. Smart cars, I think Julian Mangrant today described smart cars as essentially computers on four wheels.
This is most modern cars, I presume, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And this is the point being made, that when these things are designed, and you and I are probably great beneficiaries of being able to GPS locate ourselves in our own cars to be, you know, it's very handy to be able to lock or unlock your car remotely and do all of these things, change the music with your phone, change the temperature of the car with your phone. The problem being, of course, that those useful tools for you and I can be used with malicious intent very effectively. And so what's this sort of whole story is about is the government and safety agencies saying people who manufacture this technology, be it a car, be it a smart fridge, they need to be mindful of how they can design their products in a way that stops them being abused. I mean, the classic example is, you know, if you have an Apple AirTag that helps you keep track of your keys or your luggage, a few years ago it became apparent that these tags were being used for nefarious means to track and stalk, you know, a partner in a DV situation. Apple actually had to come up with this solution where if you are going along, going about your day, moving around, if it notices that a tag is sort of following you, it will send you a little alert. And I'm sure people have been on a plane getting told, oh, there's a tag near you. And obviously you realize that's when you're on the plane, but it's actually a safety feature to so that people don't are not accidentally or unaware of being tracked. So that's really what this is all about, is a call out to the technology sector to say you have to embed safety features into all of this really handy tech.
Yeah, it's worrying, isn't it? All right, look, now sadly, Claire, you don't seem to have been invited to the Prime Minister's wedding.
I know, my invite got lost in the mail. Actually, there weren't physical invites, so there wasn't even anything to get lost. That was how the secrecy was maintained.
Yes, the Prime Minister was married on the weekend, a pretty private affair based at the Lodge. Don't worry, apparently they paid for it themselves. Mind you, it was going to be pretty hard to hold it anywhere, I suppose, and avoid publicity, wasn't it? So maybe it was a safe location. Anything else we know about? He's off on honeymoon, I understand, from today for 5 days, but we don't know where. Probably a good idea. We don't know where, is it?
He was snapped in the airport in a very casual kind of jeans outfit. So I'm assuming he's going somewhere to have he's on honeymoon till Friday. But I think my favourite story of the wedding so far was the Canberra florist who came forward today realising that she had made unknowingly the bouquets for the wedding. She had thought she was making these flower arrangements for a, quote, Marie and Matthew. And it wasn't until she saw the pictures and realised that she had in fact made the bouquets of the Prime Minister's wedding. Oh, so that's nice. That's been my favourite story of this whole situation.
From all accounts, it was a pretty small affair, was it?
Yes, I mean, I think it was about 80 people, which maybe sounds like a lot to a lot of people, but when you've got to win, you know, I can't imagine how it would have gone if he'd only invited half of his cabinet.
I was going to say, was there anybody left out?
Not that we could tell. They were very careful to, make sure that all of those senior figures in the government were invited, and it looks like they all had a fairly good time. I'm told the PM jumped up to DJ for a portion. Of course, he would. They had a specially made beer can that had a picture of Jody and Albo on the front. So, all flavours of the Prime Minister mixed in there, actually.
Well, good luck to them anyway. It's his second marriage, as we know. It's her first. And so may happiness follow them as they head off into married life. Claire, terrific to talk. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife. Yeah.